Hey guys, welcome to episode 110 of the JV Club. This is, of course, the Boys of Summer series. I am so happy to be including my dear, dear friend and Sketchfest partner, an improv partner, Cole Stratton. It's probably no surprise to any of you that I had him do the podcast. He has his own wonderful podcast called Pop My Culture that I have done several times. And of course, the marvelous and beautiful and hilarious Vanessa Ragland is the co-host of that podcast, she has done a JV Club episode. It's one of my favorites. I still remember her Miss Piggy shirt very fondly. So excited to welcome you in for this episode. Also wanted to throw some shout outs into the mix, of course. I wanted to thank on Twitter, just a couple of Twitters. That's super clunky. Just a couple of Twitterers, Braving and Defaulting and Devman. I want to thank you guys. Hopefully everybody else who's been tweeting, I've just been responding to you on Twitter, and then on the Facebook page, Christian, Jordan, and Hannah, of course, on the Nerdist page. I wanted to thank Abby and Bronwyn, who have since contributed to Steve AG's page, and then also PJ, Jake, Amy, Alec, Jake, Paul, and Sharon. I feel like I might be behind in some email letters that I've gotten from you guys, but I'll get some replies out to you and some shout outs to you guys as well next time. If I sound like I'm groggy, it's because I just woke up and I'm recording this intro because I'm just so excited to get my day going, JV Club style. Oh, I also wanted to mention that I finally got the samples of the JV Club t-shirts. So I have looked at them. I think there are going to be a couple of tweaks that need to be made with the design size. So hang in there for those of you who bought t-shirts for the Art of Elysium fundraiser. And also, of course, those of you who've been asking about t-shirts for 2 years, we really are around the corner from having them. So that's very exciting. And then again, for any of you who bought things as part of the live episode with Busy, the fundraiser, please check in with me if you haven't received or heard about certain things. Gave you the t-shirt update. There are a couple of you who have bought multiple things with t-shirts, so I'm holding all of your stuff to ship all at once. I think that's it for now. Convention-wise, the next thing that I have 100% confirmed is Orlando. That's Night Recon. I will be there June 7th and 8th. All right, guys, listen, without further ado, I want to get on in to Cole's episode. I hope you like it, and I will talk to you soon. Bye.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Yes. We are recording. I repeat everything. I say everything twice on the podcast. Is that okay with you?
It's a good policy.
Thanks. I can see you're going to fit in just fine.
All right. I said twice.
God, I'm so furious already. This was a mistake. I was just saying before we started recording, I'm excited to be able to, like, you know, have you on, because it really is like when one of your very best friends in the world has a podcast and they have you on and you're like, thanks, that was so fun. You can't do mine. it feels kind of rotten. So it's lovely to be able to have an excuse and a reason to have you.
Thanks. It's good to be on. I'm excited to read the comment boards that are like, worst guest ever.
I like that you set a goal for yourself.
Thanks. Thank you.
I'm real into prizes for the worst.
Thank you.
What else do you think that you're going to be the worst on in today? Ugh. Of all things today that could go possibly wrong that you could be the worst at?
Gosh, I wish I knew. I mean, I set my bar so low anyways.
Yeah.
I'm just not sure which part of the basement I'll be scraping by in today.
Sure.
Yeah. It could be rough.
Did you have a basement growing up?
I did.
That's not a thing that...
It's like, not a thing on the West Coast,
but
really.
I know you were from
Michigan. From the Midwest, yeah. Yeah, people have basements there because the thing you have in the Midwest is space.
Mm-hmm. I don't follow.
Out here, it's like everything. There's so many people and it's also, you know, there's just not, it's expensive, and yeah, you know, and they didn't really build basements here. But
oh, is it like a weather thing too? Like, is it sort of like,
I think, yeah, I mean, I know that that's where you would go, like when there's a tornado warning or whatever, is like, get in your basement, hang out.
Did you, is that, are you speaking of your experience in Michigan, or like just what happens in Oklahoma and stuff?
Oh, definitely. Like, in, like, there wasn't like a lot of tornadoes or things like that, or hurricanes, whatever. It'd be tornadoes. But
give me a number, like 50 a year. Just kidding.
50 a weekend.
Okay. So, but not
like
a lot.
You would occasionally hear like the siren thing outside, or you would turn on your TV and there would be like at the bottom, there would be like tornado warning or whatever, like kind of like a CNN ticker, like
what
you get on everything now. So when that happens, we would just go down to the basement and hang out down
Did
there.
It ever feel that real? And was there a part of you that kind of was like, I mean, if one swept through, I mean, it's
right. Well, it's so yeah, weird, part of you is thinking, this like, is my one chance to get to Oz.
So stupid.
So come on,
a boy can hope.
Twister, take me away.
A boy can hope.
I want to hang with TikTok and the Patchwork Girl. You know, she's cool.
Wow, you really went like obscure Oz books references.
I did read all those.
Just straight up Munchkins.
Yeah, I did read all those growing up. So
I did too. I did too, but I really don't, like, I devour them and I super don't remember them. I remember probably just like the things that were also in the Return to Oz movie, which right. is a very weird movie.
It's a very weird yet amazing movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I remember like there's different authors of the books. There's L. Frank Baum, but there's also Ruth Plumly Thompson wrote a bunch. And I'm not sure who else, but those are the two I remember. But I didn't read them in order at all because I wasn't that interested in like starting with the Oz thing I knew. You know, like I knew the wizard's backstory. I knew what happened with Dorothy and all that. I was like, I don't care about that. Ooh, TikTok of Oz. Cool. Oh, yeah. The Patchwork Girl of Oz or whatever. So I kind
Who's Patchwork Girl again?
Just girls made of patches. I don't remember a lot about her. But yeah, those are the things that I would grow. Like there's Cowardly Lion of Oz was another thing too, but like, you would get more of the, you know, backstories of the characters that you only knew on the surface from the other stuff.
Did they ever do more? Because there were so many books. Did they ever do, like, was there ever a series or anything that really kind of unlocked, like, a bunch of those characters? Was it just, like, not interesting
really.
Enough to people and too expensive?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, I'm sure there's something
like
out there.
Cartoon
yeah,
series
think,
of Oz.
But not so much that I'm aware of. I mean, you had Return to Oz was a movie that just, like, failed on so many levels. Like, commercially because right. it was way too
so
scary for
dark.
Kids though I liked it
I
when I was
too.
A kid like I liked that it was scary
yeah I liked it and I felt the same way about The Wiz like I thought The Wiz was so much scarier and more strange and the sort of like psychedelia of both of those movies
right
were like captivating
right but yeah people I think because they're so used to the Judy Garland you know Oz thing they
the aw shucks Oz
yeah they weren't yeah. expecting one where like this woman keeps heads
yeah.
tons of heads
yeah
and just the Wheelers were scary as shit too yeah. like those out of the gate were like these are frightening
yeah the Wheelers are scary the Wheelers are were as scary to me as the like weird like subway sequence in The Wiz where like the just like random inanimate objects start sort of like coming to life and attacking you.
Right.
But yeah, but it was like the right amount of like, I can be this scared in a movie, but kind of like still be okay.
Right.
Opposed to like me seeing Poltergeist way too early, which I also did.
Yeah. I mean, I guess there's a certain age where like Return to Oz is good if you're like 8 or above. Like
yeah.
if you were 5 or 6, you'd probably be like, nope.
Scarred for life.
No, thank you.
Scarred for life.
Please check me out of this.
So that's, I guess that's what I'm kind of, because I, as a little kid, I was like more used to like lightning striking everything all around in Arizona, because that's sort of like the normal kind of monsoon season thing. But I was so fascinated by like tornado country, and I kind of still am. Like, I can't really wrap my head around it in a weird way. I kind of can't believe that's a thing. I can't believe tornadoes
are
a thing.
Especially since like what cracks me up is, because we live in California, is that people will be like, aren't you afraid of the earthquakes? And I'll be like, let me rattle off all the shit you have to deal with on a daily basis, like a lot, you know?
Yeah.
We don't have seasons out here. it's, you know, and occasionally the room sways for 20 seconds and you go, oh, wow, hey, that was an earthquake.
Yeah.
Most of the times I don't feel them.
Yeah.
The only reason I know is because everybody goes to social media and is like, oh, that just happened.
Right.
And then tries to make a joke as quickly as possible about it.
Right.
But yeah, but living like, you know, in the Midwest or whatever, like there was like you get really cold, like there's snowstorms that were scary, like blackouts at those times where it got really cold and you had to like literally build a fire in a fireplace if you had one. Or I remember there's one where it was like a weekend where there's no power and I was like, I don't know, 7 or 8 or whatever. And like all the hotels, like it was like a 2-hour radius around us were all blacked out. So you had to drive to these places, but all the hotels were booked up or drove their rates way up because they're jerks. So I remember just being like, it's like, you know, below zero in our house and we're just having to like bundle up and that kind of thing. So.
Was that why your parents were like, you know what, we've had enough of this?
So we moved to Beverly. My mom got a job at she used to work at Michigan State and she got a similar job that paid like double in California. So that's why it was like, let's go.
It's a no-brainer.
And yeah. I was so against it.
Oh, yeah?
Because I was...
And how old were you?
I was 9. So I was like in 4th grade. And I just formed my social groups a little bit and was kind of happy where I was. And so I really tried to sabotage it, even though it was just weird because I was like, if I had stayed in Michigan, God, who knows?
Yeah.
I had to be eating a lot more White Castle. Uh-huh. Here. But I remember like trying to sabotage it. Like we were selling one of our cars and like, I mean, I was pretty smart for a kid. So I would just make up stuff. Like the guy would come over like to check it out and be like, oh, it's a great car when it's not leaking oil. Stuff like that, as if I'm not you trying to sabotage stinker. It, but I was totally trying to sabotage it.
Oh, so. That's so easy for me to picture.
Yep. So I was really not funny. I was not happy. But then, of course, I came to California and I was like, what is this?
Yeah.
So yeah.
How long of an adjustment do you feel? I mean, it's hard to look back and really know, but like do you feel like you did adjust right away, or was there sort of like a weird lonely year in between, or was it
was a fairly quick adjustment because it was like 5th grade or whatever, like was what I started in. We moved there after the summer and you know it was like an okay year or whatever, but then like 6th grade was like it was like the year of my most popularity in life. Uh-huh. So it was like I went from zero to hero because uh-huh. we had a band in 6th grade that
so amazing.
Played the talent show. We did a cover of Kenny Loggins's Playing with the Boys. And
of course you did.
Yeah. And it was like we had a pre-recorded track except like no vocals on it. I sang. And then this guy John played some rhythm guitar pretty badly. Uh-huh. And then Adam, our drummer, played drums to it. So we're playing along to the pre-recorded track or whatever without vocals. But, you know, whatever. We were in 6th grade.
Right.
And then like... It was a 6th grade band.
So, that's kind of a big deal.
So, you know,
it's unusual.
3-album deal with BDG Sony. So then we started playing like lunchtimes on the quad every once in a while.
Amazing.
But then it was again like that was the time where you could buy singles that on one side was like the normal version and the second half, the other side was instrumental half the time.
Yeah.
So we would just try to find those. So we did.
That was a thing.
It was a thing.
That was like around the same time as those things cropped up in the malls, which I don't know how much I've talked about on the podcast, but
oh, yeah.
The things cropped up in the malls where you could go sing like karaoke basically and have your own cassette single that was you singing like one song on one side and one song on the other. There's no way you didn't do that.
Yeah, well, we did it. I did it with a bunch of my friends that were in a play together, and I remember we did That's What Friends Are For.
Oh my God.
Did
me
you
too.
Do that too.
Yeah.
Nice.
I have that. I totally have that one with like the guy that was my boyfriend in 6th grade or something.
My favorite thing I still remember is my friend Nate, like, because you get one take. It's not like you go in there. Yeah. It's not like a studio producer comes and goes, boys,
we
that was great.
We were in there for 12 hours, great. But I think we got it.
I think we got it, guys.
Yeah.
I remember he did one of these things where he like initially went low and then decided to go high. Uh-huh. So like he literally goes, that's what friends are for.
And you probably, if you're like me, I listened to that over and over and over because it was so novel that like you could hear yourself singing to a song that you love. So
right.
I had like time after time.
Nice.
I definitely remember I had time after time. For sure did Belinda Carlisle's Mad About You with like a girlfriend
of mine. Did
you
sing it with lots of vibrato?
I can't remember. All quivery.
Not
all Aaron Neville style. No. and then I also did that song Always. You know that song? And we both know that our love will grow. You know that song? No?
No. I probably...
Ooh, you're like the sun, chasing all of the rain away.
I wish I did.
It's so stupid. It might be by Atlantic Star.
Okay,
it
was just I remember that band, some duet song.
You know what I mean? It was like, oh, this is a guy and girl duet song. But like you and I would have been in there like every day together.
Yeah, totally. Like, pounding out tracks.
We really would have connected on the singing together in the mall.
Yeah, that stuff was fun. But I remember the things we could find to do on the quad with the band were like Ghostbusters.
Amazing.
Never Gonna Give You Up by Rick Astley. So I was Rick Rolling in sixth grade.
You were Rick Rolling.
Faith by George Michael, which is lyrically completely inappropriate for a sixth grader to be singing.
It really is.
How are you, sixth grade class? Well, I guess it would be nice if I could touch your body. Hey, how is everybody? And we did Old Time Rock and Roll by Bob Seger.
Yeah, that's a good one, too.
It's a pretty tight four or five song set. We didn't have a very long lunch break.
Yeah. Did you? And so that's when you were like big man on campus.
Well, it was weird because then we ran for student council and my drummer got elected president and I got elected vice president. So we were like the band running.
I mean, you basically, like, it's possible that Bill Clinton was aware of you and was like, I really ought to follow in their footsteps.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was like, but then it was like a 4, 5, 6 in middle school and then, you know, 7, 8, 9 in junior high.
Right.
So like that was sixth grade. So you're like kings of the school and in the band and in the student council. So it was like, this is the best it's ever going to get. And then junior high happened. And I kind of had that choice of like, what social clique do you want to be in? Because the popular kids were okay with me. Like they liked me and stuff. But most of my really good friends were kind of the nerdier set. And I was like, I just like them so much better. So I stuck with them for the most part. But I was always okay in the popular circle. So that was nice. I was never like picked on or ostracized or whatever. I was like, that kid's cool, I guess.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a nice transition in a sense. But I just didn't like a lot of the shallowness that was happening in the popular cliques. So.
Yeah, I feel like I had a similar experience as well. It was like I never was right there, but by the time I was in junior high, I knew I wasn't like Miss Popularity, but I also felt like nobody was going to give me too much guff, except for the boys were just so mean in junior high. They were just like, I think it was like uncomfortable with having crushes on girls.
Exactly.
Mean, but it translated to like abject cruelty. Like it translated to like, you're ugly, like mean, just straight out mean, like nothing clever about it. Just very, very mean.
Yeah. I never understood that. I was never like, if I liked a girl, I was like nice to her. Like I would be like, here's a mixtape or whatever. I wouldn't be like,
you smell terrible and you're a horrible human being. I think he probably has a crush on you. I don't know. And this is in Davis, right? It was straight to Davis from Michigan. From, where in Michigan was it?
Okemos, which is near East Lansing.
Okay. And Davis is like a good kind of decent size, but not overwhelming city size, sort of like a smaller
community. It's like 60,000 or whatever. It's weird, though. It's like a weird mashup of a college town, because that's where UC Davis is, but also lots of hippies, but then also lots of yuppies. It was just a weird combination of people. So you would and like the whole thing while I was there was they did not want to grow as a city. They had zoning laws. Like certain stores you couldn't be over a certain thing. So there wasn't department stores. If you wanted to go like buy underwear, say, you had to drive 10 minutes to Woodland to go to the mall there, to go to Target or whatever. Like that stuff didn't exist in Davis. It does now, finally, because they kind of expanded towards South Davis and like got bigger. I think it's bigger than 60,000 now. I'm not positive, but and then they added those kinds of elements to it. But for the longest time, they didn't, and there would always be these like people rallying against the growth. Like they would write letters into the Davis Enterprise, where I worked as a newsroom clerk for like a couple of years after school in high school, and I'd have to type them up. That's one of my jobs, is to type up letters to the editor, and it was always like, we don't need blah blah blah. And I was like, really, you don't? One, you don't want the business, you don't want the extra jobs, you don't want to boost stimulate your economy here, but also you like driving to Woodland. Like,
yeah,
it wasn't like there was like a, you know, a small underwear merchant who, you know,
right,
you could go and buy things
at. Tricky, because if it feels like, because you sort of understand, I mean, I definitely understand the impetus behind trying to keep the Walmarts and such out, because you have, they have a reputation for, you know, kind of not being great employers, but also, yeah, like changing the scope of what a small town or like a small community gets to look like and running out small businesses and stuff. But it's also, it's a little bit of a tricky situation.
Yeah. We also had a nutcase mayor named Julie Partansky, who was like this weird hippie woman who I used to intern at like this public television station for a little while. And she came on one of the shows there. And one of the things she did was she made question mark creatures. So they were like creatures in the shape of question marks that she made like out of wood and other things. But they're like little snakes or whatever. Uh-huh. Just a nutcase. And somehow we elected her mayor. And she literally had, I can't like say 100% how true this is, but I had heard that she wanted to make a city council building out of straw or something weird, like just bizarre. But one of the things she did do, and the Daily Show chronicled this, so which never is good, yeah. She built a frog crossing tunnel underneath this overpass because that's where the migratory patterns
of the frogs were.
And so it was this big thing where they built this tunnel for the frogs to be able to go through. They've set up time-lapse cameras and stuff. They've never seen a frog go through this frog crossing tunnel.
Yeah.
But, you know, that was important to spend our taxpayer dollars on, was making a tunnel for these frogs to go through this overpass or whatever.
Bless her heart.
Like, that's the kind of thing that she was working on.
Bless her heart. God, already just the stuff that you were doing when you were in high school is so much more ambitious than anything that I was doing in high school. Like, how did you come to know so early that you wanted to, you know, work at the newspaper, or that you were interested in television stuff? Is that something that came to you pretty early on?
Yeah, well, my mom always installed like a big work ethic in us growing up. So like I had a paper out early. Like I've had a job since I was like 8 or whatever. And so it was always something to do. I did a lot of community theater. Less so like at my high school, but more so like in the community itself at Davis Musical Theater Company. They had a young people's program. And then also, you know, when I got older too. So I was constantly doing that after school, which is kind of why I didn't do sports anymore, because I couldn't do both. But then I interned at the newspaper for like 4 years, and it was paid too, which was nice. Mm-hmm. So I was earning a paycheck from that. And then, you know, the community television thing, like to learn the camera stuff, because I was always fascinated with movies and things. And I knew I wanted to do something in that arena.
Yeah.
And then got jobs at video stores, like right when I got into college and stuff. So it's just always been constant. And, you know, it was always important to my mom that I get my degree and stuff, which I did at SF State and that kind of thing. But, it was more so for me, it was just like just trying to get experiences and doing different things and kind of getting a leg up on the competition, so to speak. Cause
I just think that's so great. I just don't feel like, I feel like I kind of, I mean, obviously I knew what my interests were to a degree when I was in school, but I just, like, it didn't occur to me like to connect the dots in that way, to go, well, this is a thing that I actually really enjoy. Maybe I could get a job and earn a little extra money and get some experience like understanding it better. I just don't feel like I was thinking like that. I was just, I guess I just was more lazy.
I mean, there was a time where I thought I was going to be a journalist, but what it came down to is I don't like beat reporting. Like, I don't like going and being like, your house burned down, how do you feel?
Yeah.
Like, I just don't like that. I was more like, I'd like to write reviews of things. I'd like to do that kind of stuff. And actually, we did this thing on the back of the Sunday newspaper every other week called Youth Beat, which is this one page that was all like kind of youth-oriented stuff. And I would do a profile on like a young person in the community that was doing something interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Half the time it was like, hey, my friend from jazz choir, you do this thing because it's easy.
Right.
But then we would get people like, here's a gymnast who's doing whatever. Here's a kid who volunteers to read to old people. Here's whatever, like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then I would review movies. So I, you know, I would do like a star system or whatever and, you know, review these movies. So the page was largely coordinated by me.
Uh-huh.
And I was, you know, I was good at writing. I've always been a pretty good writer, and I was good about writing about movies and stuff. And someone even wrote a letter to the editor and saying, like, I enjoy the reviews of Derek Bang, who was like the normal like reviewer, and your youth reporter, who I feel gives a nice level-headed critique of films.
That's,
I was like, hey,
great.
There's that. So I really thought I was going to do that. And this is back, of course, when print was a thing and wasn't dying. And so I really thought I was going to do that for a while. And then I just didn't – I just realized – there's one thing about, you got to put in your time, so to speak, and I just didn't want to put in the time doing the part of it that I hated.
Yeah.
So I kind of just moved more towards doing, you know, the film related things that I sort of wanted to do too.
Yeah.
So that got,
do you remember some of the reviews that you wrote?
Like, oh, what God. My mom wrote? Kept these, some of these pages. I have them in scrapbook at home. But, and I've gone back and like read them and stuff, and I was like, yeah, it's not bad. You know, there's certain things that like, I like that I was like,
I'm trying to remember what movies were out that like I especially loved when we were teens. And the only thing that immediately came to mind was LA Story. I remember that coming out when we were in high school, but
I mean, I didn't love everything. Like, I was pretty honest. Like, I was like, striking distance, 2 stars. Bruce Willis and Sarah Jessica Parker don't have great chemistry here or whatever. Like,
yeah.
So I definitely didn't love everything. But there's things I love. There's like Wayne's World, 4 stars. Like, you know, things that I just absolutely adored that I was not afraid to. But I just not afraid to like rip on something if I hated it. Because there was this, I've said this on my podcast once or twice, but there's this, there was a paper on at school where they had like, it was done like by people that shouldn't be doing this for the most part, but one person would review movies, or a couple people would, and one of these girls wrote a review of Reality Bites, which she said it starred Ethan Hawke and Winona, not Winona Ryder, but Winona. I was like, oh, there's a Judd in it, great. And then she gave it 4 thumbs up, and that made me crazy. I was like, you can't have a 4-thumb system. You can have a 2-thumb system.
Right.
You could say, like, I give it 2 thumbs up and 2 fingers or whatever. You can't give it 4 thumbs. You can't borrow thumbs. You give as many stars as you want. You can have hats. I don't care. But you literally can only give 2 thumbs to anything.
Right.
It's just like they decided to combine the Siskel and Ebert and star system and make it a multiple thumb system.
Ah, stickler.
But that was the kind of thing that made me crazy. And like that made me be like, well, shouldn't there be a certain standard that we're setting for these kinds of things?
Right.
And I shouldn't be knocking that because, you know, they were trying to write stuff and do something for people. That's great. But I just remember it infuriated me so much at the time.
Ah, that's so funny.
Yeah.
Did you? And so you were doing theater in high school and outside of high school.
Yeah.
And you also were working at the newspaper. And I know that you're good at sports, but you kind of had to give them up by then to do...
Yeah, I would just play, like, you know, with my friends or whatever. But, yeah, once I got into junior high, it was kind of like continue playing Little League and basketball and stuff or, you know, do theater, which you tend to love more and are better at. Like, I was good at sports, but I'm also tiny. Like, I was really tiny back then. It took me a long time to growth spurt. So, like, in basketball, like, of course, I was point guard. I was tiny. And then as the pitching got faster in Little League, I had a hard time keeping up with it because I was not strong yet. Yeah. Not to say that I'm strong now, but not strong enough then. So now I play like softball every Sunday and stuff, and you know I bowl a lot and do whatever. Like I like to think I'm deceptively athletic. Like people don't think that I would be good at things, and then I do it, and I was like, oh, he's actually pretty good at that. So
yeah,
I kind of gave that up. And my two best friends growing up were both like over 6 feet tall, so they were huge, and I was tiny. So when we would play basketball, I learned how to do a fadeaway jump shot over them because otherwise they would just block it. So I had this weird timing where I'd have to like kind of do a fadeaway, which gives me time to like then push it over them and give me separation. So I can hit those like there's no tomorrow. But if you just give me an open shot, I'm probably going to miss it.
Yeah.
But if you put a hand in my face and make
you
me
actually
fadeaway,
make it much harder for you,
make
you
it harder on me, I'm going to hit the shot.
Yeah, that's funny.
That's just weird to me, but
yeah.
So yeah, I started doing theater. Like I did it all through junior high and stuff, and started doing Davis Musical Theater Company. And also, there's this thing called Acme Theater, which one of the drama teachers at Davis High did, but not at Davis High. It was kind of an offshoot thing. And his children's version was called The Awkward Stage. So I did that like in 5th grade.
That's a really good. That's a great name. Yeah.
And we did the Phantom Tollbooth, and I was Milo, and I just kind of was hooked from there. And then always did it. And then I did some Sacramento Theater Company, which is like professional theater, like they pay you and stuff. I did a couple shows there, which is weird because it was just like I did Good Person Szechuan, which is this Brecht play, and there was like the director had this really high concept thing of like we're homeless people putting on this play.
I feel like that's if you're going to do Brecht, you're probably also a director that's going to be like, I've got an idea to crack this wide open.
Right. And we were like in downtown Sacramento, which is surrounded by homeless people. It's like a very big homeless population there, at least there was back when I was doing this. And so the idea was, were these homeless people putting it on? So before the show, we'd be hanging out in the courtyard in front of the theater as if we were homeless people. Mm-hmm. Like, and they made me like a punk.
That is high concept.
So like, there's photos of me like this. I had like half of my head was shaved, the rest was like sprayed up green, like that washed out. And then I wore like a chain around my neck and I rode a BMX bike and I had like a cut off jean jacket, like tank toppy kind of thing.
Sounds like you would have fit into the Lost Boys movie.
Exactly. That's exactly what I looked like. I took Star around on my bike. So
you became a vampire. Am I wrong? Pretty much.
And then like we would smoke these cigarettes in the show that were like these raspberry menthol filtered, like disgusting things, which is why I never became a smoker. It's like, these are awful.
Yeah.
But we did like 44 shows of it. And it's this 3-hour show. And when we weren't,
Whew.
in the scenes directly. They wanted us to kind of hang out on the stage for the most part, like sit against the back wall. And we had like alter egos. So my...
In what way did you have an alter? So
we had to choose a name for our homeless. We had our role in the show. Mine was Boy. And then we had to choose a name of the homeless person we were portraying. So you were supposed to be playing this homeless person who was then playing this part in the
show. Gotcha.
So my character's name was Christian Ritter. The reason it was that was because I was a huge Christian Slater fan, and I also liked John Ritter, so I put them together.
Yeah,
Christian Ritter.
Sure.
That was so. There's this Polaroid of me that they took Polaroids of everybody that had backstage, and so it says shows like Christian Ritter on it, which I think my mom still has in a scrapbook.
Oh God, that's so great.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy.
Christian Ritter, it's so perfect.
And one time, one of the guys in the show was this big trucker looking dude. Was like before the show, he would lay on a bench with his trucker cap down and just look like he was taking a nap or whatever. And this priest came to the show and saw him out front and was like, you know, bless you, son. And like gave him like $20 or something. He's like, oh crap, what do? I'm in character. I can't be like, look, I'm an actor, dude.
Right.
F off, priesty. So he didn't do that. So he took the money and then they were sitting like in the first or second row or whatever. And then he's doing the show and he could just like look over and see the priest. And he's just got this foul scowl on his face. And then afterwards he hung him down. He's like, I was in character. I'm sorry, man. Here you go. But thank you so much. The gesture was great or whatever. And it was fine. But it was just, he was like, oh no, what do I do?
Actually, that man was later killed by locusts. It was very unexpected for some people, but he saw it coming.
And funny side note, another show I did at Sacramento Theater Company was Christmas Carol, which they did every year. It was a musical. And when I was like 14, I did it. And I was Peter Cratchit and young Ebenezer's friend, Bob something. And I didn't realize this till years later, but Scott Aukerman was in that production.
Oh, really?
With me. Yeah.
That's so funny.
He was a couple years older, and he did that right before he moved down to LA because Maleva Barbula was in our show, and then she moved to LA and had him come down, and she introduced him to like Marilyn Rice Cub and Karen Kilgariff and stuff. And that's how he got started on the Mystery Show path or whatever.
Yeah.
But neither one of us, even though we hung out during that show, because I was like the oldest of the kids and he was like one of the youngest of the adults.
Yeah.
So he introduced me to the music of Matthew Sweet, who I'm a huge fan of still. Like he went and bought me a single of Girlfriend at the time. But it totally just didn't occur to me that it was the same Scott Aukerman who I'd known through our festival and that kind of stuff too, and who I'd known for years and had talked to so many times.
Yeah.
Until I went to New York to visit, and one of the kids who was also on that show was living in New York now, who I hadn't seen in like 20 years or whatever. So we met up to go to drinks, and I was literally scrolling through Twitter, and Scott Aukerman had written me about something, or I tweeted with him something, and I was like, oh, Scott Aukerman. She's like, oh, Scott Aukerman, he was in Christmas Carol with us.
Oh, that's such a crazy moment.
And I was like, shut up. Oh my God. So then I tweeted at him. I just like wrote him. I was like, hey man, were you in Christmas Carol at STC like in 1994 or whatever? And he wrote back. He's like, yeah, did you see it?
Oh, that's so crazy.
And I wrote back, I was in it with you. And then all of a sudden we were both like, oh my God. And
that
it all kind of came flooding
so
back.
Crazy.
It's such a weird random.
That's extremely random. And it's such a testament to like how much your brain gets rid of what it doesn't need someone else isn't like to have those people that have those experiences with you who keep them alive for you because you can have conversations about them and stuff. It's just such a different experience than like at least you guys both ended up remembering that. Cause I still feel like I have somebody, like I'll have people from even high school say like, oh, remember that one time, da da da. And it's so creepy when you just literally don't have a memory of something.
It's weird,
and
you
the other person does.
It's weird what you do retain. Like you usually retain like tidbits. Like I don't remember a lot of these things doing these shows, but I remember at rehearsal for one of them, Bill Clinton got either elected or reelected, and everybody like, because you know the liberal actors, like they're all freaking out. And I remember being at rehearsal and everybody cheering and stuff. And I remember I was wearing a Public Enemy T-shirt, and just like for some reason that moment sticks out in my head. Like, oh, I remember when Bill Clinton was reelected, and that's what happened. And
yeah, I'm trying to remember. I think it probably was when he was elected the first time.
It might have been.
Because I remember, I had a friend. I mean, I wasn't super political when I was in high school, but I definitely had friends who really were. And I remember my friend Maggie, shout out to Maggie, who I'm sure does not listen to the podcast, but my friend Maggie got into this huge argument with our chemistry teacher who was like a staunch Republican. And she like went off on how she was so excited because she was turning 18
like right before the election. So she was going to be able to vote for Clinton. And so it was like, cause yeah, when we were, cause she was older than me. And so it was that feeling of like, how political as of a teenager can you be? And of course you can be. And I'm sure there were plenty of kids in Davis who, you know, there are plenty of people who are, bless them, like super politically active when they're teenagers. I think I had more of the sensibility, which was, I totally agreed with my parents who were liberals. You know, I just like assumed that they were right, which I still do agree with them. But I was like, I definitely think I felt that sense of like, oh, it's great that Clinton is like really engaging the youth, but I still can't vote for him. I'm still too young, you know? Right. And so I just sort of tucked that away and didn't think that much about it. And
I was always like, the two things that I just don't have time for and I never have are politics and religion. Because my whole thing is like, I just see so much in the world being fought over these things and so many terrible things being done in the name of these two things that I'm just like, I just can't. Like, for me, it's like, I'm more like, it's more important to me to know who was in Cool Runnings. I don't know why, but
that's actually a very political movie.
It is, right?
I don't know.
But it's just that kind of thing of just like, I just, it doesn't matter. Like, I can like somebody a lot and then all of a sudden politics or religion come into it. And then I'm just like, oh no.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't, I don't know. And just even talking about it is an unpopular thing. You know, it's just one of those things where it's like, I'm kind of like, can't we all just get along and have a good time? We're not on this earth for that long.
Yeah.
So let's like enjoy things as opposed to like, let's get into huge philosophical debates about things. And you know, I don't know. Like, yeah. It's always kind of just bothered me.
I understand.
So,
that.
Yeah, I don't know. So
but that
weird.
Reminds me that you, I know that you had a girlfriend who was Mormon. Was that, and wasn't that in high school?
That was in high school.
It was in high school. So tell me about your love life when you were in high school.
It actually wasn't in high school.
It was in college?
I was in college. I was like a freshman in college and she was like a senior in high school. Gotcha. But we had known each other since we were really young.
Okay.
And I guess I'd always liked each other, but I'd never talked about it. We all did theater together. She has like a bunch of sisters, big Mormon family, as mm-hmm. you would expect, and one brother. And so all of them had done theater with us. Her mom was like the musical accompanist at Davis Musical Theater and the Young People's Thing. So I'd always worked with her mom and that kind of stuff too. So it was weird that it just finally took us like forever to finally just realize that we'd always liked each other. So we tried dating. I think we did for like a year.
Which isn't amazing timing considering that you were not in the same city anymore.
Yeah. It was became that kind of thing where like she would occasionally come up to San Francisco or I would come back to Davis for the weekend or whatever. You could hop on the train. It took like 3 hours or at that point, I don't think I had a car at that point, or maybe I did, but you could drive back and forth or whatever. But yeah, it was just a different thing for me because I've never been that religious. Like I grew up Unitarian, I guess. I would go to that church when I was a kid and then kind of just stopped going. And I know my mom kind of had a regret about that for a while. And I just kept telling her, like, look, I understand religion. Like, it's not like I don't know it. I just decided it's not for me. Like, yeah. That's fine.
Oh, and I should throw out, sometimes this happens if I know someone well and I'm podcasting them, but that I forget to mention certain tidbits. But you also do have a brother named Jay.
I do.
Did you guys, and you're pretty close in age.
3 years apart, yeah.
I guess that's not that close. It feels so close now, but back then that's kind of a big difference.
Yeah.
But is he somebody that you got, that you like, were you guys close? Did you talk about a lot? You know, he's obviously very creative also, kind of in some ways the same as you, in some ways different from you, but.
Yeah. And we had a bit of a rough childhood together. I mean, we definitely like had our moments where it was great, you know, but he was a very different kid than I was. Like I was always very quiet. Like, I mean, not quiet in the sense that I'm like shy or whatever. I'm fine. If I'm comfortable with people, I can talk and do whatever. But I was always very much like, I'm very observant. Like mm-hmm. I always have been. Like, when I was a kid or whatever, I came out just kind of like, hey, what's going on? Very quiet. Didn't cry, you know, that kind of thing. My brother came out screaming. Like mm-hmm. that's the difference. So that's our temperaments are very different too. So it was always kind of that way. Like when we were a kid, he would want to play something. Like, let's wrestle. Let's play wrestling. And I'd be like, no, I don't want to play wrestling. You're just going to get hurt and then you're going to get upset. No, let's play wrestling. No, I don't want to play wrestling. And so you keep needling me. I'd be like, all right. And then 5 minutes into wrestling, he would hurt himself and start screaming and then yell at me. And then my parents would be like, why did you do that? I was like, look.
Yeah.
He wanted to play wrestling. We played wrestling. I didn't even really do anything. And he hit his elbow against something and now is losing his mind or whatever.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of that kind of stuff. And then growing up, like, I just didn't act out. I didn't get into trouble. For me, getting in trouble was too much trouble. So I was always like the 40-year-old, 8-year-old.
Mm-hmm. So you didn't do drugs or anything?
No, somebody wanted to do something, I'd just be like, ugh, you know.
Yeah, I can see where this is going.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So, like, for us, it was like, we'd have a sleepover in high school, and, like, we'd, like, ride our bikes around town and, like, go get Mountain Dew and Mike and Ike's, you know, like, and then come back and play Nintendo. Like, that was fine with us. Like,
yeah.
We didn't need anything else. And I've always been, like, outgoing enough that I didn't need, like, to drink to feel like I had to be social or whatever. I didn't feel like I needed to alter my reality because I liked my reality. Like, I liked the world. I thought there's so many shiny things around here. Like, I don't understand the need to alter it. And I've also been a bit of a control freak. I don't like when things aren't under my control, which is why I've always been a self-starter too, because, like, if you sit around and you wait for other people to give you opportunities, nothing will ever happen for you.
Mm-hmm.
So unless you make them yourselves, like, it's just not going to happen. And mm-hmm. you're going to fail more than you're going to succeed, but at least you're trying stuff.
It is so interesting. I mean, I love everything you're saying. And as, you know, you've been such, like, a touch point for me as, like, just a balanced, like, sensible friend, and just, like, very, you know, you're just very even keel. Like, we've always known this about each other, but, like, I definitely do have the sort of more emotional ups and downs, and you definitely, like, keep it together. And it's so nice to have that grounding force. And I do feel like, based on what you're describing in your family, like, some of that does come out of, it's just interesting, the whole nature versus nurture thing. It's like, you already were that person, you came out that person, and then you sort of, I mean, I wonder if it is that situation where it's kind of like when someone likes something so much more than you that suddenly you're just like, just have it. You know right. what I mean? Like, my, you know, I always joke that I was never that into, like, you two or anything, because I would have, like, a girlfriend who was, like, obsessed with them. And so I would just be like, well, I can't compete with that. I guess just that's your band. Like, I'm not going to, because I'd be like, oh, I was listening to that song. Like, were you listening to the song from the album? Were you listening to the B-side of da da da?
Right.
And, but, like, having a sibling who is, you know, the same gender, and also, like, he just was more angsty for whatever reason, that sort of relegates you as, like, the balancing force in the family, too, in a sense.
And I think my parents were, like, weren't quite sure how to handle him because he would act out more, you know? It's just he would. And then, and I think it infuriated him that I didn't. So they just assumed if something was like, oh, Shay, what'd you do? It was like, oh, really? Really? Yeah. You know, that kind of thing. And you know, he's amazing. I love my brother very much. Like, he's an amazing musician.
He's so talented.
He's a great athlete too. Like, he stuck with the sports more, and he's got an amazing voice. Like, he's an amazing singer. Like, I'm a good singer. He's an amazing singer.
Mm-hmm.
And so he, like, we did Snoopy together when we were kids. I was Snoopy. He was Linus. So we used to do a little bit of theater, but he stuck with baseball. He was on the American Legion team and stuff. He got a hit off of CC Sabathia in high school. And that's a big major pitcher.
Means nothing to me.
He's one of the best pitchers, the greatest pitchers of all time.
That's crazy.
You know, he hit off of him. Or
that's crazy. I just said, that's crazy.
That's crazy. So he kind of stuck with that for a while. And then, but music has always been his passion. Like, he's an amazing guitarist and songwriter, and he's the lead singer in a band, State to State. And he was a solo artist for a while too. And so they're doing pretty well here in LA. They put a couple albums out, and he has a rescue dog named Zool that, like, the two
amazing.
Of them just great really
name.
Like are best buddies.
God, what a great name. God, I can't believe there aren't more dogs named Zool.
You would think, right?
Yeah.
It's a great name. So he's doing great, you know, and he, you know, it just was a different path for him. And I think just in general, because I was so well behaved that, you know, most parents, like, if who have multiple kids, like, they're all gonna act out and do things and rebel. I was just a weird anomaly that I just didn't care to do it.
Yeah.
So I think that it was just like, you know, when your first kid is, like, not a kid in a lot of ways, it's harder to deal with one that is just being a kid.
Yeah.
So, you know, and my parents,
yeah, they probably said things like to their friends, they'd be like, well, we got real lucky with Cole.
Right.
I mean, like, all due respect to Shay, who I agree is completely amazing, but my parents didn't get lucky with me. I was super emotional, and they, like, divorced, and I was, you know, histrionic about just the weirdness of, like, that energy. And I definitely look back and I'm like, I could have for sure made it worse for them. Like, I have friends who are much worse, but there's no way either of them. I mean, I think they probably have revisionist history now because I have such a great relationship with both of them. They're probably like, you are a great kid, but come on.
Right.
I know that I definitely was not, you know.
And not to say that I never did anything wrong. I was not a saint, but yeah. Like, you know, like, if I did things, usually it was because I thought I could get away with it. or whatever, or like my dad says there's one, the only vicious thing he's ever seen me do in my life one time was when my brother was like one or two and I was pretty young too, and like I, for some reason, I like, he was walking and then he was on a blanket and I just like looked at him and I just yanked the blanket out so he'd fall down. And my dad was like, it was like completely like weird. And like,
that's the kind of thing that happens with many brothers and sisters, like for years, like yeah. Every day they're being like that to each other.
So like, I didn't really, cause I've always been like, why have drama? Why hurt people? Why, you know, whatever? Like, you know, you're only around a little while. But I definitely did a few things here and there. Like, my mom and dad definitely remember the Bill and Ted incident, which is, I mean, I loved that movie so much. But there was, like, this, like, call-in number thing. It was, like, a 900 number where you would call in and you had a chance to win, like, prizes or whatever. And it was, you would get quotes from the movie or whatever. And they'd be like, see if you won the prize. And if you did, they'd be like, excellent. If you didn't, be like, bogus. Uh-huh. Never won anything. But,
You never won anything?
No, it was like $1.99 a minute or whatever. But they would say, like, enter your phone number in. And so my friends and I, for some strange reason, thought, well, we'll just enter in random numbers and we won't get charged for these calls. And we could call.
I can totally see using that logic. I can totally see that.
Just like, we'll just enter it in. Like, we won't win the prize, but we can listen to the calls. This is fun, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, my parents get like a $100 phone bill or whatever from these calls.
Yeah.
And they're like, what did you do? And we're like, and then I think they were more mad about the fact that we thought that we could charge other people for these calls.
Yeah,
versus
that's
like,
true.
And we're like, well, what? If some guy gets a $2 charge on his bill, we're not entering the same number ever.
Right.
So, you know, oh, so some dude pays $2, another dude pays $2, whatever, yeah. We get to hear this thing. Like, that was our logic on
it. And did you ever do anything like mildly pranky, like TP people or anything like that?
The only thing I think we ever did, it's just stupid. We would like ride our bikes around and we'd take like realty signs and move them. So we would like take it from one house. And then, like, ride our bikes 3 blocks and put it at another lawn.
That's funny.
Yeah, it's a pretty good little prank.
I've never heard that one before.
At the end of the day, whoever was selling their house would be like, what happened? And then somebody else would be like, we're not selling our house.
It's great because it's, like, a very unmessy, very fixable, like, it lasts for a minute, but obviously that family is like, well, our house is not for sale. And the other people are like, someone took our sign. But that feels like, not to make this about me, but that does feel like a good Janet Varney level prank where I could like be okay with that and not be like horrified at myself for, because I could never TP anyone because I just always thought, God, that just like, I was so, it was the empathy thing of like, oh, like this is fun for us, but then like, oh, they're just going to be so sad the next day. Like, that person is going to be so sad and bummed out.
But even that, like, I didn't understand the whole TP. I was like, you're putting toilet paper in their trees. Whoop-de-de-do. Congratulations.
But it's so messy to clean up.
It
you
is.
Know?
It, yeah, you're basically saying, like, let's inconvenience them. But, yeah, like, for me, like, it had to be something kind of different. Oh, the other thing that my friend and I did is this is the time where, like, you could type things in on your PC, like, and have a robot voice repeat them, you know, like that kind of thing. So you'd be like, you know, like, hey, bug your face.
I still get excited about that.
Yeah. So what we would do is we would call people up, and when the answering machine would come on, we'd have this pre-recorded message that we'd hit that would be like, hello, Mr. Smith, this is Sears. Your lingerie order is ready. Please pick it up.
Beep.
Like that kind of thing in a robot voice. Thinking that, like, is this just going to confuse the shit out of them when they listen to this?
Again, pretty tame. Good, nice and tame. Right about my level of interest for stuff like that. That's pretty terrific.
That was hilarious to us for some reason.
Yeah. And so with your, just to go back to your sweet Mormon girlfriend and like what, and then just girls before that, because you mentioned even in junior high, like you just weren't combative in that kind of like testosterone-y way that boys were when they just didn't know what to do with their feelings and stuff like that. Like how did that stuff develop for you in high school? Like, did you have serious girlfriends?
I did. Like, it feels like I've pretty much always been in a relationship from like high school on. Even junior high, I had a lot of girlfriends or whatever, but they, you know, their junior high romances last a month and then we don't like each other anymore. So, but yeah, like in high school, I had a girlfriend for a couple years. But she was a year younger than me. And so when I went off to college, that broke up. And then the Mormon girl happened for a while. And then after that, it was like a couple of,
this is so none of my business, and it's awkward to ask, but like as a person who had a friend that I really kind of was in love with in a way, but that who was Mormon, and like I had lost my virginity and he hadn't, and that was like hard and weird. I'm just wondering if she, I guess it's you can respect her privacy, but is it like, because you're not supposed to have sex before you get married.
Right, which we didn't. So yeah. It was, you know, that didn't happen. Like, you know, we'd make out and stuff, but that was kind of it.
Had you already had sex with someone, like, before, and then you just respected her, or did you just not? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I didn't, like, none of that happened until, like, college or whatever. So, I waited a while or whatever. But, yeah, like, I just, you know, for me, it was just, like, I, you know, liked her a lot, and, you know, had pined over her most of my life, so
yeah,
it was just cool to be like, oh hey, we're in a relationship. But then I mean it was never really gonna work anyways. Like, she's Mormon, I'm not. I would have had to have converted, and I tried to read the Book of Mormon, and it was a lovely fiction. But
unlike the Bible, just kidding.
Right, well, they're both great
just
great
kidding.
Books.
Shout out to people who believe in that in
no
those,
I mean
in
I,
the,
I
in
don't I don't want to like yeah anybody's faith, but like the Mormon, like the story, it's a pretty incredible story in a lot of ways, that like obviously they have faith in it or whatever, but I was just kind of like, I'm only doing this for a girl. Like, I'm not doing this because I believe and I want to be part of the church. And for me, that felt hypocritical. So,
God, I wish you could have had a conversation with my father when he was in his late 20s making the same decision.
It just felt like I'm not doing a service to anybody, you know? Like, this is like, why be part of something that's faith-based if you don't have the faith? Yeah. That's kind of the way I looked at it at the end of the day. It's just like, you know, look, like, I'm into you, girl, but I just can't. It's not fair to you. It's not fair to your family. It's not fair to your church. Like, that's, I respect it. Like, it's not to say, like, I don't like religion, but it's not that I don't respect it, because I respect that people have faith and community and that kind of thing. Like, I think that's great. And I think whatever gets you through the day is great, whatever that is, you know? And if believing in some sort of God or being spiritual or whatever is a thing for you, that's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mind that. I don't like it when people try to force it on other people and say that whatever they believe is wrong, because I don't think that there's a definite absolute. I mean, there's no scientific proof of anything.
Right.
And they say, well, because it's faith-based. Great. So you have your faith, believe in that. That's fantastic. But that doesn't mean that I have to believe in that, because
it's, you know, hard,
that whole thing,
right?
It's tough.
It's so connected to other, like, to your point earlier, it's so connected to other bigger things like community, and then the sort of flip side of community, which is like elitism, or, you know, wanting to create a group of people that in some ways should just be supportive, but then also ends up being like, well, we're right and you're wrong, to create that other, like, we're, you know, we're this group, we take care of ourselves and look after each other, we'd love to grow this group, but you can't be in this group unless you believe X, Y, and Z. And that's always been tough for me too, is that sense of like, I, as a, not to just, you know, go too into down the Mormon rabbit hole, cause I know I have on other podcasts, but, to feel like a little bit on the outside looking in and not wanting to be on the inside most of the time, but also being like, I mean, it is pretty great. Like, the way they take care of their elderly is amazing. Like, they're sick, you know, that when you have that positive side of that community, when it's like, oh, I don't have to worry about my mom. Like, some, you know, if my mom won't be near me and I can't move to Tucson, I know that there are people in that community who would literally bring her a meal three times a day. We don't need to have that happen. My mom's fine right now. But to know that that exists is so wonderful. But to also feel like, you know, yeah, but they also feel like I made a huge mistake and like I'm gonna burn in hell for
right. Yeah, I mean, you know? It's like, you know, like most of the Mormon families I know are like big and loving, and they're lots of kids. Like the my Mormon girlfriend from college, high school, has like 4 or 5 kids now. Like, she's doing what she wants to do, you know?
Yeah.
That's great. You know, she's a mom and she's super happy, and that's fantastic. And she has her community and she has her church, and she, you know, like, that's the road that she wanted to travel down. I just knew that that was never going to be for me.
Well, it just doesn't surprise me at all, because I know I'm psychoanalyzing you, but everything that we've even talked about here just shows that some people have, got to get at least one burp in every podcast. that some people have that kind of, that sort of inner structure. Like there's a core, like some people have a core that is more grounded and based inside than seeking that stuff from the outside. And I think the same person in you that didn't need or want to like get really fucked up and, you know, be like on drugs all the time or whatever is also the same person who didn't need the external force of religion to sort of conduct yourself in like a nice way.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I've just always felt like I've always kind of known who I was or kind of what I wanted to do in life.
It's so amazing to me. It's so clear.
And so it just made it easy for me. Like, it's just like when you're not struggling to figure it out. I mean, I think a lot of people that do all those things and have done it or whatever is because they're just trying to figure it out, like what it is they want to do. And for me, I just kind of knew who I was early on and I was okay with that.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it's not to say that I don't have struggles and things with my personality and stuff. Of course I do. Like, you know, everybody does. But in general, like I was never looking to really reinvent myself. If anything, it's like I've just kind of tried to fine tune myself in a lot of ways. Like find, okay, so this thing is not satisfying to me. Okay, what can I find that will make, you know, fill that void in my life? Okay, cool, found it or whatever, that kind of yeah. stuff. It's constantly trying to do that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've always looked really young for my age. Like that always was like, I always hated that. And now that I'm, you know, in LA, of course, they're like, it's the best thing ever for you. But
yeah.
I hated not being taken seriously by people my own age. That's always been something that I've always hated because I've always been mature enough on a personal level, but like, and I feel like I'm pretty smart. Like I can, you know, hold my own with most people. And that's kind of what kept me safe growing up. Like people, bullies didn't try to, like when they did pick on me, I would just say something like kind of cutting that their friends would laugh at and then they didn't get it. So then they would be like, oh, okay. But they knew that they shouldn't pummel me now because like I've curried favor with the people around them or yeah. whatever. So that's always kept me out of trouble because I knew just enough to say something cutting, but nothing that was going to be like infuriating. You
yeah.
know?
Well, it's kind of the difference between, I can't believe I'm going to make this comparison, but it's kind of the difference between like, even when what we're told as women, which is like, don't walk looking at the ground, looking victimized in a bad neighborhood sort of thing. It's almost a weird like bully version of that, which is like, you may not have been big or strong, and it's not like you were drawing it by being like a wise ass, but like if you got picked on and you had the strength to sort of look someone in the eye and say something snarky, that's very different than just like shuffling your feet and, you know, just being like, oh, here's my money. You know what I mean? Or whatever. Like that's totally a cliche, but it is kind of a good line to walk where you just, I feel like you just didn't project yourself as like a victim, you know?
I remember like in junior high, like there's this, I would eat lunch with two of my friends, my friend Chris, my friend Ellis, when we were all kind of geeky or whatever, but, and then we would eat lunch outside, underneath this tree or whatever. And like these three older boys decided that like that wasn't cool. So they started coming over and started picking on us. And I remember one like dumped like a cup full of pears with pear juice in it or whatever. That's from the student lunch or whatever on my head. And I remember just being like, I think I said something like, well, that's a poor use of fruit. And then he got mad. And I was like, he's like, yeah, but now you got, you know, stuff in your hair. I'm like, I'm a teenager. I have greasy hair.
And yeah, like, he just took his power away. Exactly.
Like, I'm not going to give you a reaction. In fact, I'm just going to kind of dismiss you and roll my eyes at you, which is kind of what I did. And then like, they did this for like a week or so. And then they just,
it's not left fun. Us alone because
like, I wouldn't give them any sort of reaction.
Yeah.
So
I like that. I like that as a general sort of, it reminds me too of some of the like self-esteem stuff that I do with the Art of Elysium, where we sort of coach these kids who get picked on for one reason or another, whether it's they, you know, had a cleft palate, so they have a scar, or they have diabetes, so people see them, you know, checking their insulin levels and stuff, that it really is. This is something that like, and every time I do one of those programs, I feel like I walk away being reminded of how to engage with the world, because there's so much that's similar, even just as an adult, which is just a sense of like, yeah, just kind of know yourself and be comfortable with who you are and know that somebody else's behavior doesn't have to change you. Like it doesn't have to change even really the way you feel. Of course, in the moment, I mean, I can't imagine that you literally felt nothing when that happened. You probably were like, oh my God, this is, how am I going to, what is my reaction going to be? It could be this or this.
Yeah, my whole thing was like,
to kind of take the beat and like go down the middle road is never a bad idea.
How can I pummel him without raising my fist? It's kind of like my thought process at all times. It's like, how can I take his power away from him without having to like literally get in a fight because I was little. Like, there's no way I could have done anything to him. Like, I would have taken a swing, he would have laughed, and then he would have punched me in the face. Like, so I was like, how do I avoid that? And like, it's just a barb. It's just like, act like a bigger man in a sense. Like, don't react. And like, it's like, don't just sit there and like be silent, like a silent protest or whatever, but like, just, you know.
But it also feels like, going back to that sense of self, that you also had an innate understanding that you weren't deserving of whatever was happening, which is a huge thing, which is like something for us all to remember, which is, again, it goes back to that. It's like, you also weren't like, I'm horrible, like, I deserve to have pears, you know what I mean? And some of us allow ourselves to believe that bad behavior is coming at us for a reason. And it just seems like you're good at being like, no, there's no reason. I'm great. I'm fine. I'm not, this is not about me. So how do I make this go away?
I always had a little bit of that, like, when that kind of stuff would happen, I'd be like, yeah, you're going to be here forever doing this kind of shit. I'm destined for bigger things. Like, I had that kind of thing in my mind of like, and, you know, it's not an arrogance. Some, you know, occasionally I've been accused of that. But for me, it's just like, I just felt like this is my formative years, but like, this is not going to be junior high forever. There's not going to be pears dumped in my head. So like, just, this is part of the process, but I'm going to go and do something great. Ha ha, you.
Yeah.
Like, that was always in my mind, was like, I'm going to go and create something or do something that's going to be noteworthy. That's kind of my thought process. And like, everybody should feel like that way. Everybody should aspire to that. Nobody should be like, I'm not going to do anything. I'm not going to get out of this town. I'm not going to be. It should always be like, nope. I will show you guys. If it needs to be a revenge against the people that didn't believe in you, so be it.
Yeah.
That's the motivation it takes to go out and do something kick ass. Like, I had my, I'll have my 20-year high school reunion this August. That'll be weird. But I went to the 10, and it was exactly what I wanted it to be. It was like, all the like popular people who were kind of mean just didn't do anything. Like, they were just kind of like gained weight, didn't leave town or whatever.
Yeah.
We're in 9-to-5s that were just kind of whatever. And then the weird kids, the kids that were a little strange, that danced to, you know, a different beat, so to speak, were all like, grew up to be gorgeous people, you know, and then went to places like, I'm a photographer in New York, or I'm a model in Brazil or whatever. Like, doesn't matter. Like, they did interesting, cool things.
Yeah.
Like, you kind of hoped that they would. And it was kind of exactly what I wanted it to be. It was like, cool. The only thing it wasn't was that I couldn't go and had to send a video from a set of Belize or something, you know, like, hey guys, I'm filming this movie, can't be there, wish I could be, I'm super famous.
Yeah.
It wasn't that. But, you know, at that point, I think we were a couple years into Sketchfest, like maybe three, so it was starting to be a thing.
Yeah.
But it really wasn't that much yet. But, you know, I was doing improv and, you know, whatever. So I was following a creative path. So I think for people, like, oh, it's cool, he's the guy who did improv and stuff and act and stuff is still doing it.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
So it was cool. It was cool. So, but the 20 will be interesting to see kind of where everybody is now.
Yeah. No kidding. Oh yeah. Yeah. I feel like, I've not been to any reunions, but, mostly because I feel like I know where everyone is that I really care about, but it would be cool to see. And I guess I kind of hear about some of the people that were more like that, where I am like, oh, he sells cars now. Okay. All due respect to somebody who sells cars who enjoys it, that there are people that I think pretended and behaved as though they were going to be like president of the United States, but were not particularly magnanimous or nice. And it's, you know, perhaps are doing things that they don't get a lot of joy out of, or maybe they do. And, you know, that's fine too. But,
well, the weird things now with like, because of Facebook and things like that is like, you have dibs on everybody. You
know, it's like, it's like 24/7 high school reunion. If you want,
you know exactly what they're doing.
Yeah,
it's going to be the few people that aren't on social media, or you've kind of lost track of, that you've kind of forgotten about. There's going to be the interesting ones to see if they're there.
Yeah, and you know, if you really want to have that experience where everyone's in one place, that's different. That's certainly different than being on Facebook. There is still something to be said for being in the same room with someone.
It's very true. It's very true.
All right, I want to get into some MASH with Mecole Stratton.
Klinger.
Oh, great. Here we go. All right. Well, hold on. No, just hang on.
Radar.
You married Hawkeye.
yes.
I know. That's what you wanted. Okay. So categories for Cole Stratton. I'm going to straight off the bat just dive right into, you can live in, give me three 80s movies that you wish that you could drop into and live in for as long or as little as you liked. But
okay, three that I want to be in.
Mm-hmm.
Whew. Let's go with Girls Just Want to Have Fun.
Amazing.
Come on, dance TV, guys. Midnight Madness. And Pretty in Pink.
Oh, yeah.
Because I would love to be Ducky.
Good old Pretty in Pink. Okay, great. Great, great, great. All right, next one is... this feels like a no-brainer. Three Disneyland rides that, for some reason, suddenly become real in some way.
Ooh. Okay. Space Mountain would be terrifying, so I don't know if I could say that.
Right? I'm always shocked when people say that. I'm like, I don't know. It's a fun ride, but geez.
And Mr. Toad, you'd go to hell, so I can't choose that. Dumbo?
Oh, okay.
Why not? Ride him around.
Sure.
Take a chance. You got a feather. You got Timothy. Big Thunder Mountain Railroad. Because it's the rudest, toonest, wildest ride in the wilderness. Tom Sawyer's Island. Not the Pirates of the Caribbean lair that it's become.
Right.
I don't need Jack Sparrow shoved up my ass everywhere because that's what it constantly is now. There's something about a boy whitewashing a fence that is pretty magical.
I agree. Tom Sawyer's Island is still... I was just there and I hadn't been on it in a while because it always seems like waiting to get on the raft would take forever.
Yeah.
And I forgot how great it is just to be in those little caves and when it was non-pirate related too. Just that sense of that was captured so beautifully by Mark Twain, but also just like how we all feel, which is like having that place that's just yours, that's just for kids,
yep.
That feels like... You know, this is our realm, you know?
Side note, have you done the canoes?
No, I've never done the canoes.
Oh, it's hell.
I guess I thought you were going to sell me on them.
We finally did. I haven't. Because I go a lot, so every once in a while I'll be like, let's just do something we haven't done or whatever. Yeah. And so and my friend Jamie does them all the time. She's done everything in the park a million times. She's like, oh, let's do it or whatever.
Yeah.
So we did it. And it's just like, it burns. Like, it's tough. Like, you're constantly rowing and it's on one side. And afterwards, my arm was like...
exercise.
Well, but it's also like... There's a ton of people in the boat. Half of them are giants. Because, you know, you go to look, if you want to feel great about your body, just look around at Disneyland and you realize that most of this country is really needs help.
We just need some help.
But it's a heavy boat that you're trying to row. And then a good quarter of the way through it, half of the people stop rowing. Like, they give up. And the guy who's, like, rowing, he's like, yeah, guys, you got to row. We got to go, because otherwise we're not going to do it. So, like, it feels like those of us who are rowing are really rowing hard to try to make up for the people that are like, nope. Not gonna do it anymore.
Right.
Where's the churro cart?
Right.
So, yeah. Afterwards, I was like, that really. I'm burning. It's a burning sensation.
Yeah. It's. I feel like I leave Disneyland happy but exhausted. But I don't want. I don't know if I want to leave exhausted. Like, I should have paid someone for the workout.
Yeah. It shouldn't be the manual labor ride.
Yeah.
That's. Yeah. No, thank you.
Also, I accidentally fell down the rabbit hole, so to speak, of
Alice in Wonderland. Looking up,
yeah, literally, and I got very hurt. No, but I was having some conversation about like injuries that happen at Disneyland. I was like, I've never really looked this up, so I looked up to see like who's died and who's been injured at Disneyland. It really is just like 18-year-old drunk kids on grad night who do. Incredibly stupid stuff.
Let's stand up on the Matterhorn.
Oh, it's so grim.
It's dumb. Yeah, that's that kind of thing they do. Do you know that people scatter ashes on Haunted Mansion?
No.
It's not like a stray occasion. It's happened a lot. People bring ashes, scatter them. Of course, they immediately shut down the ride if they see it or whatever. But after that, they just sweep them up at the end of the night. So like... Those beloved ashes that you will scatter momentarily near Madame Leona are now in a Mickey bin somewhere.
No.
It's a thing. It happens.
That's bad. I think the key is to scatter them at a different ride where no one's expecting it.
Right.
Great moments with Mr. Lincoln.
Yeah.
You just poof out some ashes into the crowd. That's so weird. All right. Okay. Third category will be... I know that you enjoy mixology, so I'm going to say three. It could be, you know more about it than I do, but I'll give you some options. It could be either like, it could be a combo thereof, but it could be like, you invented this drink, so this is what the Stratton is. Or it could be like, there is a drink that you yourself have made that you wish kind of was like as ubiquitous as an old fashioned or something. Just three drinks that like... you can take credit for that are kind of around and about.
Okay. I mean, I do make a lot of stuff at my home bar, which is fun. And that's the thing that my wife and I like to do is just go to like crazy bars and try things and stuff. So there's something like I've made a bunch of names after pop culture things because that's what I do. There's one I made called Griggs Grog that, and that's named after the dude from Last Starfighter, the alien pilot.
Perfect.
And it's like a tropical drink that's like pineapple juice and velvet falernum and allspice rum and dark rum, light rum. Mm. It's just really yummy and potent.
Yeah.
So that one.
Okay, Griggs Grog.
Is pretty amazeballs. This one I didn't invent, but it's my favorite drink. It's a Negroni. Like, I get that pretty much everywhere I go. And then...
What's in that?
Negroni is gin, Campari, and vermouth. It's one part of each. It's the easiest thing in the world to make. And you'd be surprised how many, like, bartenders don't know how to make it. It's a classic cocktail. I've had to, like, teach them. And yeah. They usually go, like, we don't have Campari. And I'm like, I see the bottle right behind you. You do have it. Yeah. Come on. Make it. Yeah. But I like that a lot. Which is weird, because I did not like Campari at first. I was like, this tastes like paint. How does anybody like this?
Acquired taste.
But like it's just really bitter, but then you just start, your palate starts to like it after a while.
Yeah.
And then the sweetness of like the sweet vermouth and the gin kind of balance it out, and it's just being this nice little drink.
Beautiful.
And now it's starting to get popular places. Now I see it on a lot of menus. So, and I used to drink old fashions all the time too, and people are like, you're not 80, why do you want those? But now it's like the hip drink everywhere.
Yeah, of course.
So go figure. And then there's this other drink I made called Regulators Mount Up.
Uh-huh.
Of course, named after Young Guns. And also pineapple juice-based. I find I like that in cocktails. But it's made with mezcal, a Fidencio mezcal, which is nice and smoky. And then a little bit of, I think there's a little bit of Saint Germain in it to give it a little bit of sweetness. It's a simple syrup. And it's cardamom clove syrup. So it's kind of smoky and sweet at the same time. So I like that a lot too. So I'll
lovely.
Like that sometimes at home.
Regulators Mount Up. Love it.
Yep.
okay. Let me do three vacation homes in, fictitious places.
Ooh. Okay.
I've gotten a lot of flack for only giving the examples Tatooine and Middle Earth. Neither of which
neither place
pick.
I'd want to live.
Yeah,
no.
But those are the examples I give. Like those are like as if those are the only two fictitious places I can think of. It's very sad.
That's it, right? Those are the only places
that
exist.
It. That's it.
Weird. Okay. Ooh, God. Let me try to think of some fictitious lands that I like so much. Oz is too fucked up.
I know some places are, but it could also be like the like what you like about it. You like only what you like about it, and you know nothing that's bad.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Why am I blanking on?
Could be like outer space places. Could be, what do I know that you like? Could be like that weird place that the kids from Explorers go to.
All right, I'll take. Is it Eternia for Neverending Story? Is that what it's called?
Oh, I can't remember what it's called right now, but yeah, the Neverending Story. Yeah,
okay, pre-nothing.
Yeah, definitely pre-nothing.
I want to hang out with Falcor, so a little shack near him so he can zoom me around.
Great.
Go hang out with the Rockbiters and stuff too. You know, whatever.
Agreed.
I'm a popular guy there.
Agreed.
I would not go to the Swamp of Sadness, though. Forget that.
Oh, skip it.
Right, because your like horse just dies.
Oh.
He wants that.
Nobody.
Nobody does.
Nobody. What else? What other things can I remember that I know that you like? Oh, I have one that I think would be fun for you.
Okay.
What if you had a little vacation home in Emmett Otter's?
Oh, that would be
town,
amazing.
And you could play with the band.
Yeah, totally.
Okay.
That would be great.
Otter.
I think it's called Frog Hollow.
I think you're definitely right.
Could be wrong.
It's definitely a hollow of some kind. Probably Frog Hollow. I love Frog Hollow because of the frog tunnel.
That's right. I love to hang out with Doc Bullfrog. Seems what you needed, folks, was each other.
Exactly.
Yeah, that'd be good. And, okay, one more. Let's go with Melmac.
What's Melmac?
That's where Alf is from.
Oh. fantastic.
They had like an animated series where they also had trading cards, and what they had Booyah baseball cards. And Booyah baseball is the sport they play there, where they basically throw fish soup at you and you try to hit it.
Okay.
So yeah, I'd hang out in Melmac with Alf.
Amazing.
With alien life form.
Got it. Got it. Okay. The fish head baseball reminded me, tomorrow Matrix style, you wake up, able to expertly play three sports.
Okay. Probably baseball, 'cause I enjoy that. Hockey for sure.
I knew it.
'Cause
hockey lover.
I do love me some hockey. And Hialeah, because I don't get it.
Yeah, what? I don't know how you play Hialeah, but it's a clue in New York Times crossword puzzles all the time.
Is it really?
There's like it's either like it's like a Hialeah clue, or it's like or what's the name of the basket that they catch in? And I keep thinking to myself, like, boy, I know a lot of Hialeah terms that I don't know what any of them really are.
Wait, maybe we'll make it cricket. Because that's a game I don't quite understand, but matches last week sometimes, so I feel like
fascinating.
If you could really get into it.
Yeah.
I guess the better answer would have been golf, but we'll stick with cricket.
No, I like cricket better. Golf. Right. Screw golf.
Take that, golf. Take you down a notch,
yeah.
Golf.
Yeah, golf. Okay, three forms of transportation. As reasonable or unreasonable, as fantastical or as reality-based as you want, but it can't be just driving a car.
Okay.
That's how you get around.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, and your laptop did not give this idea, but a light cycle from Tron right. would be badass.
Yeah, sure would.
Especially
sure
if you don't have to do it on the grid. Hoverboard.
Gotta go hoverboard. Future 2 technology. Gotta go hoverboard.
That should have been here by now. Yeah. Where are you on that one, science?
We gotta get on that.
Yep. And I'd love to have like one of those giant mech suits like they have in certain movies. Like they had in District 9, like the
little
mech cities.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Like that's pretty badass.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
Or like Robot Jocks, that crappy movie from the 90s.
Amazing. I'm going to go with, I guess this kind of goes along. Well, you know, the drink thing is also just something that you're now famous for. Like you invented the Negroni. But I'm going to go pretty tradish with my last two, at least tradish for me. One of them is going to be a food. I mean, I guess something that's really bad for you. Doesn't have to be. If you're like, I wish I could just have edamame. That's kind of a wasted wish. But right. Some food as specific as you want, like there's this one place that has this thing, or just like I could always eat black licorice or whatever.
Okay.
That you could always have, snap of the finger, no health, nothing unhealthy about it. Just turns out it's good for you.
Okay. Beignets. Cause yeah. Those are delish.
Yeah, they are.
The best thing I've ever eaten. So I've had to put this on the thing just because I've only had it one time. It was the best thing ever. Was in New Orleans at this restaurant called Giacomo, and it was a blackened redfish with chipotle aioli.
Ooh, I'm in.
And it was delicious. So I'd have to put that there.
Both New Orleans based at
yeah,
this
weird,
point.
Right?
Yeah.
It's strange because it's not like I eat Creole food that often.
Yeah.
But I guess I do.
I guess you do. I guess you would.
I guess so. What else? I like so many things, and it's tough.
Because food's delicious.
Yeah, I know. Food is good, mm-hmm. right? I mean, I always love tacos.
Yeah, just a delicious taco.
There's just some nice, delicious tacos. Always good.
I'll throw that in there. What kind of taco?
Let's go carnitas. I do like carnitas with like I like cilantro a lot. It's like a little lime crema and cilantro. Yeah.
Love it.
That'd be nice.
I wonder how many times I've eaten Mexican food with you in the last like 15 years.
Probably a decent amount.
Well, that's one of the amount.
Places
that's what
that we
do in San Francisco.
Yeah, we both agree
and
on.
I can actually both. Yeah, we can both eat. Okay. Listen, nobody loves your wife more than me.
Right.
All due respect to Jenny.
Trash can. Who are we going with?
If you think that it will make your marriage more comfortable for you to go old school, You can do that. You can do anything you want. You can do people who don't exist in real life. You can do like someone from a movie or a novel. You can do actresses that you would have loved when you were a teen. You could do current stuff, whatever befits your mood and marriage.
All right, so three ladies.
Yeah.
That I want to get my freak on with.
Yes. Yes.
Labyrinth era Jennifer Connelly.
Right.
Because,
yeah.
She was so cute. I do have a thing for Manic Pixie Dream Girls, so I'm going to have to go Zooey Deschanel, you guys.
Yeah. Hear ya.
She's pretty adorable.
She definitely is.
Third one. I think I would have like this list more ready, but I just don't even really think about it. All right, one more. This has got to be a good one. This is going to be a good one. I feel like I want to go fictitious, but then I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what else I know about you in terms of like things that you loved or...
Man.
Who is she?
Who is this lady?
Who is this lady?
God.
Audrey Tautou? Like Amelie?
I don't like the French accent.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
I did go as her for Halloween once.
I know. That's what made me think of it.
It was so confusing for people.
Your costumes until are the always
people
great.
That got it.
It's so great.
It. Ooh, I'll go with Heather's era Winona Ryder.
Yeah, good one. See, we got there.
Yep.
Amelie led us to something good.
Do love some Veronica Sawyer.
Okay. All right. Tell me when to stop.
Stop.
Okay.
Some people like wait for like a minute and you're like, please. Yeah. No.
Believe me. Those are real long ones. All right. I'm going to pause this, do some math and come back with your 100% guaranteed MASH future.
Sweet.
Okay. I'm feeling pretty good about this. Right. Some of it makes me laugh harder than others. Okay. First of all, I want to thank you because this is already kind of happening, but since you actually invented your favorite drink, the Negroni,
right.
Well done.
In 1898 or whatever.
I don't know. How would that taste good with a beignet?
It might.
Because yeah, you definitely sure. have unlimited... guilt-free beignet availability and sweet. Access at the moment's notice.
Hooray, fried dough.
Can we get a beignet here? That'd be amazing. I want to congratulate you on your expert skill at playing hockey.
Nice.
I think you got a really good one.
Good one, eh?
Yeah, that's a really good one, eh? And actually, that will come in very handy because you can skate all over the place when you go to your vacation home in Frog Hollow.
Yay.
Yeah, little river skating with a gang. Also, you have an apartment there, which for some reason seems weird. It seems weirdly city-like.
Can't afford a house.
Yeah.
Property rates are skyrocketing around here.
I guess you just live in like, maybe your apartment is just like the little upper story of like one of the stores on Main Street.
Well, they're, you know, I'm a snake oil salesman. It's
right.
Really.
Right.
Poor there.
You're only going to live in an apartment. We all know that. But when you need to also just escape to a little something different, maybe when that lake is frozen over, you can skate out over to Tom Sawyer's Island.
Nice.
Which is pretty great in real life. It's a real life wonderful place. Or you can get there by just tromping through the water and over the land in your mech suit.
Nice.
Threatening everyone in your way. Or as if that weren't enough, and I don't know if you wear your mech suit into this world, but I think you would definitely score when you showed up in your mech suit for Girls Just Want to Have Fun.
Hey, look at Cole in his mech suit entering the dance contest. Archie, so Wendell. Funny.
Yeah, Girls Just Want to Have Fun. And then that just takes us to your sweet lady friend, who I'm pleased to report is the one and only Zooey Deschanel.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Nice.
Real cutie pie. Real cutie pie.
She'd love to sing down in Frog Hollow with Ma and Ott.
I'm sure she absolutely would. The only thing I'm concerned about is I think eventually she'll probably do Sketchfest, so you'll probably be right in front of her, so we'll just have to see Listen, here's the deal, world. It's different.
Look, breast tacks. You and I are going to live in a fictitious Henson town.
I should probably give you this so that you can present it to her, because this is like a binding document.
I can provide. I made a Negroni fortune. We have a mech suit.
Yeah. Yeah. You got it pretty good. Nice stuff. Really great choices. And a great podcast episode. Thank you so much for doing it.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Yay, Boys of Summer.
To finally see you. Oh, yeah. I should give you some Sketchfest stuff. All right, everybody. Yay, Boys of Summer. As of the tradition that I have now created, just with only two episodes behind me, I do feel like I'm obliged to sing a little bit of the Don Henley song, Boys of Summer.
I feel like you should.
So we're going to start from the beginning. And actually, I'll just sing the music part and you can sing the. Do you know how that that song starts?
I just don't know what the lyrics are exactly.
I think it's nobody on the road, nobody on the beach.
On the beach.
Something's in the air, something's out of reach.
Yeah, that seems right.
Or you could just do the chorus.
That's okay. We can do the first. Nobody's on the road. Nobody's on the street. Something's in the air. Something out of reach.
The sun goes down alone. I'm driving by your house, but I know that you're not home.
I can see you. There's a shade in the sun.
As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.